Hello, and welcome to Science World. A lot of us depend on the caffeine in our morning cup of coffee or tea to wake us up and keep us going. U.S. researchers are now saying that that same ingredient that kickstarts our day can also boost our memories as well. China has tested a new missile delivery vehicle, which is designed to travel several times faster than the speed of sound. A California company has developed a new smart spoon that they hope will help those living with Parkinson's disease feed themselves. And in our one-on-one segment, we talked with the European Space Agency's senior scientific advisor for space science missions about Rosetta, a spacecraft that has been sent to the far reaches of our solar system to closely study a comet. The Rosetta has been in hibernation for the last 31 months and will be roused from its slumber on Monday, the 20th. These stories and more are coming up for you on VOA's Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. A new study released this past week is suggesting that caffeine can be used to boost our long-term memory. With more on this story, here's Science World's Bob Doty.
Writing in the journal Nature Neuroscience, researchers at Johns Hopkins University said that their findings show caffeine boosts certain memories for up to 24 hours after being ingested. Conducting a double-blind trial, the researchers worked with a test group of people who didn't regularly consume caffeinated products. 5 minutes after studying a series of images, the test subjects were given either a placebo or a 200-milligram caffeine tablet. To check the caffeine levels of their test subjects, the research team took saliva samples from them right before they took their tablets, and then again 1, 3, and 24 hours afterwards. Both groups of test participants, those who took the placebo and those who took the caffeine tablet, were tested the following day to see if they recognized images they'd seen the previous day. The test included showing the participants another series of images that included some new images, those that were shown the previous day, as well as other images that were similar, but not the same as those they had viewed earlier. The researchers found that more members of the group who were given the caffeine tablets were able to correctly identify some of the new images as similar to previously viewed images rather than incorrectly identifying them as the same. Being able to recognize the difference between two similar but not exactly alike items is called pattern separation, which is something, according to the researchers, that reveals a greater level of memory retention. Similar studies conducted previously suggested that caffeine had little or no effect on long-term memory retention. The researchers said that they also believe caffeine is associated with healthy longevity, and that it may have some protective effects from cognitive decline due to diseases like Alzheimer's. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
China has conducted an experimental flight of a hypersonic missile delivery vehicle designed to travel several times faster than the speed of sound. Science World's Doug Bernard has more.
Beijing's defense ministry did not comment on the outcome of the test, which it called scientific in nature and not targeted at any particular country. The Pentagon confirmed but would not comment on the Chinese test, which comes as some in the U.S. worry about China's rapid military growth. If perfected, hypersonic technology could allow countries to strike targets anywhere in the world within minutes, bypassing missile defense systems. The test was first reported by the Washington Free Beacon, which quoted U.S. officials who said the vehicle flew at Mach 10, that's 10 times the speed of sound. Experts say it is extremely difficult to master the technology needed to control the hypersonic vehicles, making it unclear how soon they will be ready for use. Charles Vick, a senior technical analyst with GlobalSecurity.org, says hypersonic technology is still in the development stage, but could be ready in 5 to 10 years. Vick tells VOA it is difficult to track, detect, and intercept a hypersonic vehicle because it does not fly as high as ballistic missiles.
It is almost impossible to be shot down by existing anti-ballistic missile systems, which it's highly maneuverable and represents a real technological challenge to any anti-ballistic missile system in development or in existence today.
The U.S. is also developing and has tested hypersonic vehicles. One of them, the Falcon HTV-2, is made by Lockheed Martin, which says it can travel at a speed of Mach 20. Russia is also said to be developing the technology. For Science World, I'm Doug Bernard.
The definition of modern retailing is evolving. Retailers are looking at new technology to help them lure more customers. New York's Convention Center was the site of the 103rd National Retail Federation Expo. Bernard Schuchman went to check it out.
New York's big retail exposition is big business. At the New York Convention Center, high tech was center stage. It's called the Big Show for a reason. Thousands of companies, hundreds of thousands of prospective customers, all here for that one thing that will make the difference. Every screen, every surface is an opportunity to engage. Images can be shared so friends and family can weigh in. Even the dressing room mirror becomes a vehicle for sales. Intel's Tyler Hoffman says it's called the memory mirror.
It's designed to make trying on clothes and shopping for apparel in-store, make that experience digital, social, and interactive.
The images can be shared via text, email, or social media. This motion-activated screen by Scala lets prospective customers swipe through watches with a wave of a hand, using technology to get closer to the product. Peter Charon is the chief technical officer of Scala.
It's novel, it's fresh, it's engaging, it's easy to use. It's what people are expecting out of technologies from their video games, from their smartphones.
A simple idea, a flat surface, has become a platform for media display. Gerard Schiffman invented the Perch interactive system.
Over the entire store, where every surface could become a platform for media display, because the way that people consume media now, it's on their iPhone, they're surrounded by it. It's sort of strange that in retail stores that hasn't happened yet, that it's not a media experience.
Ryan owns a surf shop and likes the concept.
Feels like you're working with a 3D smartphone almost.
You see a customer coming up and it's definitely engaging, you see the imagery.
Even the old-fashioned scale surface has changed. TellerMate counts the money by weight. In tests we saw, it never missed, and it took only a second or two to do its job. It saves time, which equals money. The international retail landscape is expected to change more in the next 10 years than it has in the past 50 years, largely due to new technologies and the internet. Bernard Schuchman, VOA News, at New York's Convention Center.
Coming up in a few minutes, we'll learn more about the European Space Agency's comet-chasing Rosetta mission. Those responsible for developing the space mission named it after a very famous historical object. What's the name of that object? Is it A, Rosetta Calendar, B, Rosetta Meteorite, or C, Rosetta Stone? Good luck! We'll give you the correct answer in a few minutes from now.
You're listening to Science World, VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine.
It's summer in Australia, and heat waves there are becoming more common and severe. That's according to a report released on Thursday by the nation's Climate Council. And as Phil Mercer reports from Sydney, the report comes as southern Australia is bracing for even more punishing heat.
Temperatures in the southern city of Adelaide have been near 46 degrees Celsius, while Melbourne is on track to record its second longest heatwave since the 1830s. Strong winds are likely to increase the bushfire danger later this week in South Australia and Victoria, where more than 1,000 fires have been reported. Some 40 are burning out of control. The Climate Council says periods of intense heat in Australia are becoming more frequent, hotter, and are lasting longer. It predicts that they'll become increasingly severe in the future. Researchers blame climate change and believe that the burning of fossil fuels is trapping more heat in the lower atmosphere. Professor Will Steffen, one of the authors of the Climate Council report, says events spanning many years were studied.
Well, we're putting together data over many decades to look at longer term trends rather than individual events. It's when you do that you start seeing those trends of longer heat waves, more frequent heat waves, hotter heat waves, and they're actually starting earlier in the season. And this shows you that the basic fundamental characteristics of heat waves are indeed changing towards conditions that are worse in terms of human health and well-being.
Health authorities in Australia warn that extreme heat can kill. 173 people were killed when bushfires tore across the state of Victoria in February 2009. Health authorities in Australia warn that extreme heat can kill. 173 people were killed when bushfires tore across the state of Victoria in February 2009 in what was known as the Black Saturday bushfire disaster. In South Australia, dozens of people have been treated for heat-related illnesses and more ambulance crews have been put on duty, with the number of patients expected to rise later in the week. Dr. Bill Griggs is from the Royal Adelaide Hospital.
The commonest things actually are deterioration in existing medical conditions that can be affected by a degree of heat stress. But you get other simple things ranging from heat rash or prickly heat. Some people get cramps, people can become dizzy and faint. But it's when you get more affected and run the risk of heat exhaustion or heat stroke.
The extreme heat also forced matches at the Australian Open in Melbourne to be suspended. The punishing conditions are expected to continue into Friday, while a cool change is forecast over the weekend. Scientists say that 2013 was Australia's hottest year on record. In many parts of the country, 2014 has started in a similar fashion. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
Last month, China successfully landed an unmanned probe on the moon. The mission renewed a debate about the potential exploitation of the moon's resources and who exactly owns the Earth's only natural satellite. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
China's Chang'e 3 mission was the first so-called soft lunar landing in 37 years. The spacecraft carried a solar-powered buggy called Jade Rabbit, which is digging the moon's surface and conducting geological surveys. Deputy chief designer of the probe, Jia Yang, is excited about what lies ahead. He explained that Jade Rabbit is now heading to the west towards a pyramid-like rock, which has a different shape from others. It could be part of a meteorite, he adds. Prior to the mission, Chinese scientists described the moon as being a potential source of minerals. Currently, no one can claim ownership of the moon, says planetary science professor Ian Crawford of Birkbeck College, University of London.
The legal status of the moon is governed by the 1967 Outer Space Treaty, Article 2 of which specifically prohibits nation states from appropriating the moon.
Back in 1967, the treaty envisaged that only nation states would have the capacity to launch such missions. Professor Crawford says it is time the treaty was updated.
Within the next few decades, the economic exploitation of the moon might be technically feasible. Even if there aren't minerals to be extracted, the space tourism industry is gathering a lot of momentum. So one might imagine interest in sending people to the moon as just fare-paying passengers. None of this is currently covered by the 1967 treaty.
The Chinese lunar landing may have sparked a debate over the future exploitation of the moon, but scientists agree the mission marks an exciting new chapter in the exploration of space. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
One of the biggest challenges for people living with Parkinson's disease is the difficulty and sometimes inability to feed themselves due to the shaking tremors associated with the disease. But help might be on the way. A new high-tech smart spoon promises to stabilize the vibrations. Brian Allen has the story.
For people suffering from Parkinson's disease, a disorder of the central nervous system, simply eating a meal can be an ordeal. The most common symptoms of the disease are related to movement. The basic act of getting food from plate to mouth can be difficult and frustrating. But now there might be a solution. Lift Labs, based in San Francisco, California, has developed a small device that tracks and compensates for small vibrations and tremors. Anupam Patak, the founder and CEO, explains that the technology behind Liftware is similar to the image stabilization feature in high-end cameras. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
So what we've done is taken that same concept and applied it to a handheld device that would help people with a lot larger jitters. So somebody with a neurological disorder might be moving, you know, up to an inch in magnitude. There's a little computer inside that's running an algorithm that would basically sense the person's motion, determine whether that was intentional or unintended. And if it's unintended, move opposite to what that motion does.
The result is that the device remains smooth and level, despite the movement of the user's arm or hand. Food that would normally fly off remains on the spoon.
That just makes all the difference in the world, I'm telling you.
Being able to see somebody eat, you know, on their own for the first time, or, you know, even just eat better, has made, you know, it's a hugely impactful thing.
The device costs $295, but Lyft Labs also accepts donations to help those who cannot afford to buy one.
We just have a donate button for whatever amount people would like, and what we're doing is we're collecting those so once we get enough for a device, we'll actually send it out to the International Tremor Foundation or any one of the other Parkinson's foundations, and they have a list of people that might be coming from economic hardship and wouldn't be able to get a device like this.
A spoon is currently the only attachment for the LiftWear device, but Patak promises that more attachments, like a deeper soup spoon and a fork, will be available soon. Brian Allen, VOA News.
A few minutes ago, we asked if you could identify the historic object that inspired the name of the ESA's Rosetta space mission. Is it A, Rosetta Calendar, B, Rosetta Meteorite, or C, Rosetta Stone? The answer is C. Engraved on the Rosetta Stone is a decree issued by a group of ancient Egyptian priests around the year 196 BC. The stone was inscribed with essentially the same text in three forms of language: ancient Egyptian demotic, Greek, and Egyptian hieroglyphs. Scientists with the knowledge of demotic and Greek were able to decipher the meaning of modern hieroglyphs. Some consider the deciphering of the Rosetta Stone the pioneering effort in translating unknown languages. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
You're listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the internet. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
Folks at the European Space Agency are holding their breaths and keeping their fingers crossed because this Monday at 10 hours Universal Time, the space agency's Rosetta spacecraft will receive a signal that will wake it up from its 31-month nap. While ESA is quite confident that Rosetta will respond as designed, anything could happen since it's now in deep space some 807 million kilometers from Earth. For the last 10 years, the Rosetta spacecraft has been traveling through our solar system for a rendezvous with comet 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko, or 67P-CG. The mission was designed to perform a detailed investigation of a comet. ESA says that the Rosetta mission will give scientists the opportunity to gain some insight into the creation of the solar system and its planets. ESA's Senior Scientific Advisor for Space Science Missions, Mark McCorkran, joins us today for our one-on-one segment to tell us more about the Rosetta mission and its goals. Can you tell us a little bit about the Rosetta mission?
So, Rosetta is a spacecraft which is currently in the outer solar system, and it's been out in deep space for 10 years already, waiting for the big day, which is in 2014. And what does that mean? It's winding up to approach a comet, not only approach a comet, but rendezvous with it, escort it for more than a year, and then land a small lander on the surface of the comet later in 2014.
Why do you think it's important to send a spacecraft to a comet?
Comets are very interesting objects. They're effectively time capsules. They've locked up material which is left over from the origin, the birth of our own solar system, the star in the middle, the sun, the Earth, and all the other planets which are in the solar system. And comets have got material left over from that formation period, which was more than 4.5 billion years ago. So by going to a comet and examining it in detail, studying its materials, what it's made of, the gas, the dust, the water, and even digging some of it up and investigating it in our spacecraft, we hope to learn a lot more about the origin of the solar system we live in today.
Why was Comet 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko selected as the target for Rosetta?
Well, interestingly, we actually had another comet target in mind, a comet called Vertanen, and we were unable to go to Vertanen because we had a failure of one of our launchers 11 years ago, and so Rosetta was next in line. But it's a very interesting comet, because one thing about comets is that the ones which are in the inner solar system and go around every few years, and CG goes around every 6.5 years, goes around the sun, that means that the surface gets heated up by the sun, material flows away, it gets processed, it gets kind of different on the surface to the way that it is underneath, the primitive material. But CG actually hasn't been where it is for very long. In the 1960s, it had an encounter with Jupiter, quite a long way from the sun, which actually kicked it from an orbit which was further out in the solar system, and it brought it closer in. So that means we can get to it pretty easily. In that sense, it's a very young comet. It hasn't been heated by the sun many times. So we hope it's going to be a good target to find that primitive material on.
The Rosetta spacecraft has been asleep for about 957 days and will be awakened on January 20th. Now, why was the spacecraft put into hibernation, and what's involved with waking it up?
Spacecraft that go deep into the solar system receive much less sunlight. So at Jupiter, for example, there's only 4% of the sunlight that you get when you're at the Earth. Most spacecraft, NASA spacecraft, for example, that have been out to Jupiter and the outer planets, had nuclear power, what we call radioisotope thermal generators. It's radioactive material which is warm and you can generate electricity. But for our mission, for Rosetta, we developed very special solar arrays which can operate under very low intensity conditions and very low temperatures, which we get out close to Jupiter, because that's where we are at the moment. We're way out in the solar system where the comet is before it falls into the sun. But even then, even with huge solar arrays, we don't have enough power at that distance from the sun to run the whole spacecraft safely. So what we did in the middle of June 2011 was to turn off most of the systems, all the instruments, most of the housekeeping systems. We left the main computer on, and we left some heaters on to stop the spacecraft getting too cold. And then we started to spin the spacecraft so that it would be much more stable. When objects spin in space, they actually are stable. So at that point, spacecraft was no longer pointing its main antenna, its big dish, back to the Earth, because the spacecraft's spinning, it's pointing all over the place. So we haven't heard from the spacecraft for these 31 months. So what happens on January the 20th is the main computer, which has been on the whole time, will check to see what the time is, and when it reaches 10 o'clock universal time, it will say, oh, it's time to wake up because I'm approaching the sun again. I've got enough power now. So it has to start warming up. It has to then spin down, stop spinning. Then it has to use its instruments on board to look for stars in the sky and recognize what those stars are and find the patterns of the stars in the sky. And from that, it can work out where it is and where the Earth has to be. Then it can point at the Earth, point its dish at the Earth, and send us a signal to say, I'm here, I'm back again.
I'm thinking that there's probably quite a few of you at ESA who are holding your breath quite a bit for that turn on.
For almost 31 months. I mean, we tested the hibernation, as we call it. We've tested this system of turning it all off, spinning it, and then letting it restart itself again. So we're pretty confident, of course, that it's going to work on Monday. And there's lots of redundant systems in there. But, you know, there's always a risk in anything you do in space. And it's been cold for quite a long time. We've kept heaters on, so not everything's really super chilled. But still, we've never done this before. We've never put a spacecraft that far out into space for that long. And we hope everything will be okay. First thing in the morning, our time in Europe here, when the alarm clock goes off, when we receive the signal after the spacecraft's done everything it should do.
Mark, I want to thank you so much again for taking time to talk with me. And I hope everything works out.
Yes, well, so do we, because, of course, without this wake-up on Monday, we don't have a mission. And that's the real excitement. You know, this is the beginning of the mission. But later in the year, as we get to the comet, we start taking high-resolution pictures of it and pick a place to land on it. I hope we have a chance to speak again then about how exciting it will be, the big adventure for everybody.
That was Mark McCorkran, Senior Scientific Advisor for Space Science Missions at the European Space Agency, which is headquartered in Paris. That's it for this edition of Science World. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.